Good morning. I am Jared Witt, your pastor, and I am delighted to be back. Had a wonderful time of sabbatical away, so you'll hear more about that in coming weeks and through the fall, but I can't thank everybody but by name, but so many people did so many things that enabled me to be away. I'm just incredibly grateful. It was a wonderful time, but I'm ready to be back and glad to be here. Last night, right before I went to bed, was in the kitchen. Henry, who rarely says much without being asked point-blank specific questions, said, "Dad, are you nervous about tomorrow? Because you shouldn't be. You probably forgot how to do your job." So we like to encourage one another. So this is an odd story, huh? I want to begin by suggesting that it's not a cute little story about a magic Jesus who can walk on water. It's a powerful and challenging experience of the good news for us. It raises wonderful questions, opens new possibilities. This gospel story is about the difference between playing it safe and living with real courage. And we all need courage if we want to move forward into the larger, more beautiful lives that God offers to us. We need it because some of us are heading back to school soon. Laura talked about that. Some of us are taking on new jobs or taking on new roles in life. Some of us are preparing for retirement or getting ready for a significant move. Some of us have experienced losses and are in the grieving process. That's hard. And all of us want to find ways to be both more courageous and hopefully more kind in an extremely divisive and difficult political climate. This morning, of course, we come here with heavy hearts after this weekend in Charlottesville, an upsurge of white supremacists marching there, so it's confusing and unsettling. We all know that we need to put our life roots down in some soil that can ground us and sustain us and guide us. And we need a church family that we can depend on, that gives us that stability. As a congregation, of course, we're coming off this unique summer where I was away on sabbatical leave, and voila, it went fast, but I'm back, and you all were doing your thing this summer, both here and other places as you traveled, and summer's always a little bit different for all of us, but we're regrouping and sort of moving forward in ways that will be new and interesting, I think. So when we hear this story, we're not primarily concerned with the shape of the boat or what direction the winds were coming from, as if we're just sort of curious onlookers. This is a story about us, and God's Spirit whisks us into the story, into the boat, tired and terrified, straining our eyes to make out the strange figure walking towards us. The seas are surging. It's the middle of the night. Our muscles ache from rowing, and we are desperate for some good news in this situation. Is there any good news? Jesus doesn't teach us how to avoid storms. In fact, as far as I can tell, he sends the disciples straight into this one. But he is teaching us to trust him when storms arise, like Laura said. He's teaching us that we're his friends, that we share in his ministry, and that we can find the courage to hop out of the boat and walk the waves. Now, this kind of courage doesn't come naturally or easily to most of us, certainly doesn't to me. We're much better at crying, complaining, and cussing as we cling to dear life on the bottom of the boat. And yet, if we listen today, we will hear the voice of the risen Christ speaking to us, saying, "Come. Come out. Come out of the boat. Come forward into a new and larger and better life." The images on the back side of your bulletin, if you haven't seen them yet, take a look at those. Those are just close-ups of the carvings that are, you know, there's these wonderful carvings on the buttresses here, but the final two, and, you know, the balcony folks have the best seats today, maybe always, right, are ships. The carvings are ships, so I didn't want you to strain your neck or have to walk up there. So that those are close-ups of them. It's Noah's Ark on the west. It's the sailing ship on stormy seas over here on the east. These are architectural details that I love. These are reminders that we are gathered here as part of a congregation of people that stretches back to 1925 when this sanctuary was built, back beyond that to 1859 when this congregation was founded, and back beyond that and bigger than that to the chain of all God's people who have fought and struggled to figure out what it means to live the good news, to be people who belong to Jesus Christ. And that great tradition invites us to imagine life with God as a dangerous voyage through rough seas with a boat full of other people. So no wonder that three different gospels tell the story we read today, the story of Jesus walking on water and a boat full of fearful disciples. Mark's gospel's the shortest. It was the first one written. In Mark's version of the story, Mark 6, there it suggests, strangely, that Jesus was planning on walking past the disciples on the lake, walking by them as if he's sort of tiptoeing, trying to avoid being discovered. But they recognize him, and then he's like, oh, okay, I guess I'll get in the boat. In John's gospel, John 6, John adds the detail that the disciples had rowed approximately 3.5 miles out into the lake before Jesus came walking to them. And then according to that gospel, when Jesus finally gets into the boat with them, poof, they're immediately at the shore. Okay? Well, if I was one of the disciples, I would be thinking, where were you for the first 3.5 miles? Neither Mark's version of the story nor John's version of the story mentions Peter getting out of the boat. Only Matthew's gospel does so. That's what makes Matthew's version of the story distinctive. Matthew doesn't focus on Jesus calming the rough seas. He's already told a story like that in Matthew 8:23. Rather, we are to pay attention to Peter's audacious and temporarily successful effort to walk across the waves. Now, if I'm being honest, it seems to me like Peter was a real idiot. I think getting out of a boat in the middle of the night into turbulent waves so that you can walk towards a ghost-like figure is not an obvious sign of courage. To me, it's a sign that you've probably had a bad oyster and are hallucinating. Nevertheless, this is exactly what Peter does, and to our great surprise, it kind of works, right? He manages to walk on the water as long as he stayed more focused on Jesus than on the wind and the waves. Now, I know that some of you love sailing, okay? Odie, Bob, are others of you love sailing? Anyone else? Some of you love kayaking or rafting on treacherous rivers. Bill, John Crane just got back from rafting. Others of you love that sort of thing? Count me out, all right? I've never been on a small sailboat. I've certainly never been on a small sailboat in rough seas. In fact, I've built my whole life in order to avoid scenarios just like this. I snorkeled once off the Florida Keys, got stung by jellyfish the whole time. I whale watched once in Hawaii and was sick the rest of the day. Blame my wife for that, because I told her that was going to happen. I'm extremely motion sensitive. And so I've never been on a cruise, but I can imagine what a cruise would be like. My family and friends dancing and laughing and bowling and gambling and swimming and eating their mid-afternoon snack of steak and lobster, whatever it is you do on a cruise boat. But I know where I would be. I would be down in my tiny little room puking my guts out. So I'll take a pass on the cruise for now. If you saw the movie Dunkirk, you saw many scenes in that movie where the ships were bombed as they were trying to evacuate and the soldiers having to leap from the ships into the seas. They were terrified. So was Peter. So are you. So am I. When the waves start crashing over the edge of our lives and we begin to feel like we might get overwhelmed. I do think it's timely that we're reading this story today. It's my first Sunday back after being away. Before I left, back in May, I shared with some of you what I had read about sabbaticals from other people, that sabbaticals can be beneficial for both the congregation and the pastor. I talked about how the congregation, while the pastor's away, can find new rhythms, can hear fresh voices, can have new experiences. The congregation can discover and deepen its leadership, can take responsibility for who it is, and pastors can refresh and rest. They can heal and recharge. They can come back, hopefully, with fresh ideas, with more energy. Now, all that's great stuff. I also read about some bad stuff that can happen when pastors go on sabbaticals, and I didn't say much about that. All kinds of crazy stuff can happen when pastors go away, and has, in fact, happened. Sometimes groups of people who are angry with the pastor form a committee, informal committee, to figure out how to get rid of him or her when they get back. Sometimes congregations spend the majority of the time the pastor's away complaining about how poorly the pastor does his or her job, that they're likely doing it better in his or her absence. Sometimes terrible people get into terrible fights with one another and the pastor comes back to a war zone and has to sort it all out. Sometimes the church staff loves its freedom that the pastor's finally away and dreads the day the pastor's ever coming back. No amens, Lord, just be quiet. So I could go on and on. I didn't say a lot about all that stuff. But my point is, this season of life through which we've just come, that takes significant amounts of courage and trust on your part as a congregation. It takes courage and trust to allow your pastor to be away for a significant period of time. It's risky. You have to ask lots of other people to step up and take on leadership responsibilities during that time. And it's dicey to expect the congregational family to adapt to this new thing, to the pastor being away. It's hard. Will our ministries continue? Will we be able to worship together? Will we get along? Can the budget hold? These can be anxious times. But you all have done it. So there's this wonderful sense in which you all have already lived out Jesus' invitation to get out of the boat and onto the waves. And yet there might be some other areas of our lives where we've become somewhat addicted to comfort and to safety in ways that we miss out on the life that Jesus offers to us. So just for a couple of minutes, how can this story help us learn to live with more courage? First, the story reminds us that it's normal to get stuck or confused. It's okay. It happens all the time. People like us get stuck or confused. Of course, it's never fun to find ourselves in a life-threatening storm. It's never fun when life puts us in a position where we can do little else but scream, "Help!" But life is full of difficult, tricky, energy-sucking, hope-draining situations, right? And when the storms come your way, it's pretty common for regular people like us to get stuck or confused. Did you notice that in the story, the disciples don't recognize Jesus? Likewise, in the artwork that's on the front of your bulletin today, the Christ figure appears indistinct, ghost-like. That's what it felt like for the disciples in the boat. They were straining against the wind and the waves. They were stressed, exhausted from fighting the storm. And when Christ draws near to them, they don't recognize him. The same will be true for us, up and down on the swells of life, knocked to and fro by these relentless waves. It doesn't always feel like we are people loved by God in Jesus Christ. It doesn't always feel like Christ is near us as our strength and our wisdom. What it feels like is, "Help!" The good news of this story is that the storms we face are never signs that we've been forsaken, that we're alone. But they do put us in situations where we can pray, "Lord, I'm sinking, help me." And we may not even see Christ clearly until we get out of the boat. Christ usually appears for us in the midst of risk and sacrifice and adventure. So facing difficulties frequently makes us feel stuck or confused, like we can't quite see the way forward, but those might just be the occasions in life where we can see God at work most clearly. Here's the second thing. The story reminds us that we are friends with Christ and not mere spectators. We're Christ's friends. Now, most of the disciples in the boat, they were spectators. That is, Jesus did the walking on the water, and they just looked at it and said, well, ain't that curious? But not Peter, right? Not Peter. Peter sees himself as Jesus' partner and friend, and so he wants to walk on water too. He wants to do what Jesus does. As people gathered by the grace of Jesus Christ, we are not called to sit around and clap for the fancy things that Jesus does. That's not our role. We are his disciples and his friends. We are his partners in ministry, and we are to involve ourselves in his work doing what he does. Jesus doesn't treat us like we're passive groupies. He treats us like his genuine friends who go out in his name, blessing and healing and teaching and encouraging other people. He treats us as friends who have to be faithful to God, even when we face threats to our safety and our comfort. Now, surprisingly, this story turns out to be not really about the spectacular and amazing things that other people do. It turns out to be more of a story about all the ordinary ways in which we live out our friendship with Christ. So you're already doing this. Let me remind you of a few of the ways you do this. We provide for and care for our families. We help and share our neighbors. We contribute to the well-being of our larger community just by the work that we do. We tend to our yards, our farms, our flower beds, our gardens. We offer encouragement when other people grow weary. We celebrate other people, good ideas. We express our gratitude on social media. We fix things, make things, and build things. We share food and welcome other people into our homes. We share financially with people who struggle, with organizations doing good work, with the ministries of this congregation. We remember other people in prayer. We visit people when they're sick or lonely. And these are just some of the countless numbers of ordinary ways that our lives express our friendship with Christ. What he does, we do. Last thing, the story reminds us that God offers us a life that's free from fear, like Laura was talking about with the kids. What Jesus says to the disciples during the storm, he says to all of us right here, right now. Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid. To each one of us, to all of us as a congregation, to our nation, shaken, confused this weekend with what happened in Charlottesville, he says to us, take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. He's not scolding us for being afraid. He's offering a new way to live that isn't dominated by fear. Take courage, live from your heart. Find that place in the center of who you are where God has gifted you with confidence and strength. I trust that God is speaking a timely and powerful word to all of us who are here today. Perhaps God's offering a newfound courage to us as a congregation because there's something out in front of us that we're supposed to accomplish, something we're supposed to get done, and maybe it's going to be difficult and we'll need lots of courage and creativity. Perhaps God's offering newfound courage to some of us who have opportunities before us this very week, opportunities that will require more freedom and more courage, more tolerance for risk than is customary for us. Maybe there are opportunities for new relationships, for reconnection, for leadership, for honesty, for repentance. And for what you need to do, you need freedom from fear, and you need the courage to try something new. And the risen Christ is here today inviting us all, come. Come out of the boat. Come forward into a larger life. And if you fall, I'll catch you. Amen.